Blog Talk Radio.
Enjoying a good sports week, lots going on, and actually this is a great celebration, and I'll tell you what I mean, but let me just let this Tyler the Creator play out right quick. Love this. I could listen to Tyler the Creator all night, but since this is not a music show, I keep it on sports, but anyway. Thank you for tuning in to Scott Burks with the Clown Hour. I'm the creator of the sports ball called the Clown Times. Try saying that a million times. It's Clown spelled with K. Find me on the web at www.theclowntimes.net. And you're able to find me on Facebook as well. I'm having fun at the expense of the New York Giants and my new whipping boys the last 2 weeks since they're over. But at any rate, go to the search one in the upper left-hand corner and type in the Clown Times. Again, it's Clown spelled with K. You'll be able to find me there as well. I mentioned that it's a special show tonight, special occasion, because tonight is my 200th podcast. 200 damn podcasts. And I spent the last podcast with my man here, my main man. You can catch him on Sleazy Radio every Tuesday night, or he and the coach on Blog Talk Radio, as well as check him out on the blog, the yard/HBCU Sports, where he talks about all things HBCU sports. My man, Dwayne Nash, you done a lot of these shows, man. I don't know if I'm aging dog years or it just seems like it's flown so fast. I mean, it just flown by so fast. I mean, thank you. And I'm sure I'll do this again once this podcast, near the conclusion of this podcast, but thank you for being so instrumental in the vast majority of my 200th podcast. It's been a great ride, and looking forward to continuing this journey, my brother.
Hey, I'm just grateful that you decided to have me come along with you as consistently as you have. I thought about it earlier, man. You know, I was like, dude, okay, so it is a 200th show. How many times have I been on the show? My God.
Thinking
about old subject matter that we've talked about and how the landscape of sports has changed over the time in which you've been doing the shows and everything, man. It's been a wild ride.
It's crazy. It is crazy. I mean, it's one of those things, if we had a budget, it could hire a statistician to to go through, well, like an intern rather, to go through the shows and count the number of times exactly. But, I mean, it's more than half. There's a lot more than half of those shows. And just off the top of my head, I'm pretty certain about that. But nevertheless, man, it's been one cool-ass ride. And, again, I'll give you props near the end, just as far as the reiteration goes. But I thank you for this. And let's do it up for 200, man. Let's do this.
Hey, I'm just thankful that I've been integral in helping you get to this point. You know, so I'm more grateful towards you, man. It's been a blessing, you know, and I'm just grateful that you've allowed me to come on the show. And I'm just trying to figure out exactly how many times I've actually mispronounced your name on the show throughout the 200 shows. God, man, I swear, I will never let that day live down. I will never live that day down myself. In terms of what happened that particular day outside of the show, it's still hilarious to me, man, because I know I always find myself trying not to mess it up again.
There you go. It's all good, brother. But again, the pleasure's all mine, and it's all good, brother. It's all good. Speaking of all good, I didn't touch on this last week because of the gravity of the situation that was President Trump and also what went on in the college basketball world, you know, that bombshell that happened with the recruiter, of course, Rick Pitino and many others, their jobs, and, you know, the other shoe has not fallen yet. It's probably going to be uglier than we think it's going to end up being, rather. But I forgot to touch on the Carmelo Anthony trade. As my beloved Knicks, we finally freed Carmelo. We finally freed Melo. You know, we traded him for, of course, Enes Kanter, Doug McDermott, and a second-round draft pick for next year's draft, if I'm not mistaken. But seeing him the other night in the exhibition game playing against Houston, you know, alongside Paul George and without Russell Westbrook, of course, he looks like a new driven man. I figured he would. I figured he'd come out balling. I know it's preseason, again, and cats are trying to get a feel for each other and everything else, get their legs underneath themselves. But he seemed like a man who was determined to actually do some damage. I mean, because the way I look at it, man, and we'll talk about this as far as landscape of the NBA goes, particularly the Western Conference. I mean, you have another big three in OKC. If you think about it, you know, Westbrook, George, and Melo. I'm interested to see how this dynamic is going to work. I know that Westbrook has been trying, like behind the scenes, trying to get, I think, Paul George there with them, and he's been talking to Carmelo as well. They all have mad respect for each other, mad love for each other. I'm just interested to see how it's going to translate. But to me, I think this was a win-win, especially considering that, you know, everyone in the mountain knew that, similar to Cleveland and Kyrie, everyone knew that New York was looking to move on from Carmelo and vice versa. And for the Knicks to get two quality players for depth, that's not bad. They
not at all.
I mean, Enes Kanter can actually play. He can't play a lick of defense, but he's a good offensive player. And, you know, McDermott is a spot-up three-point shooter. I'm not saying we're going to win over 30 games next year, but, I mean, that gives my squad some depth. And, of course, OKC has another star who's a little past his prime, but he can still get you buckets. He can still get you 30 on any given night. So basically, I think in the short term it's going to help OKC, but I think long term, you know, I think both teams will benefit long term, I think, because, of course, Westbrook signed that long extension. I should have developed a left-handed shot. I should have developed a left-handed basketball, but at any rate, that $250 million
$240 I think it was.
Extension? $240 million?
Yeah.
Okay, $240 million? Okay, $240 million. I mean, 5-year extension, goobly goo. That's almost $50 million per.
Yes, it is.
In, but it's not going to be in the $40 million range. But anyway, what are your thoughts on the trade that went down between the Knicks and OKC?
Now, it's interesting that you say that it's a win-win, because I look at it the same way. Because, of course, just like you said, New York wanted to get out of the Carmelo Anthony business, and
right.
OKC technically needed a third guy in order to be in order to compete in that upper echelon of the Western Conference, which is now
right.
Golden State, Houston, and
right.
not necessarily because of players, but because of the head coach as well as the players, San Antonio. So they needed to go ahead and start competing on that level.
Right.
It's interesting because I didn't get a chance to watch that preseason game. That Carmelo is coming out with more energy, and he looks like he wants to play. I mean, of course, he probably should look like he wants to play because he's playing in a situation where he's potentially contending for a title. And if you think about it, he doesn't need to be the number one guy in this situation, or especially on a nightly basis. He could be the number three guy. And be fine, and knock down 20 and be cool. You know, because you have Paul George that can get you 25 a night, and we most definitely know that Westbrook can get him 25 a night as well. So all he has to do is be a strong contributor, be a fantastic third option. What they're attempting to do, if I remember correctly, is have him play the stretch four. They're putting him at the four, and see what this team does. I thought it was funny that when the trade was first made, the first thing that was thought of was, oh, my God, what is OKC going to do on the defensive side of the ball? And that's why I just found it funny when you said that, you know, Enes Kanter can't play deep. So there's some that thought that he was the defensive epicenter in Oklahoma City because when he got traded away, it was like, oh, my God. But I'm in the same boat as you. I don't think that they necessarily lost a lot of defensive power. You have Robertson that plays the two. He's not a great defender, but he's good enough, as well as Steven Adams. What you need is someone that to keep offenses respectable, and they can do that along with a lot of the other veterans that they have on that team with Raymond Felton and Patrick Patterson. You put those boys out there, they should be able to be respectable defenders and allow the big three to get you buckets, and everyone else should go ahead and just wait for open buckets or give you a strong appearance occasionally. So they should be fine, and they should be able to compete. My real question is, and it's something that I've said on the show many times, I'm probably going to go ahead and say I probably said on the show about 22 times, what is your identity? What is right. your identity? Because I don't know what this team's identity is under Billy Donovan, especially now with the addition of Carmelo Anthony. I don't know what they're going to – and Paul George, actually. I don't know what this team is going to look like, what their identity is going to be, what their go-to thing is going to be, what they're going to rely on in times of trouble. But I guess as the season goes along, we'll see it develop and have an understanding of what it is that this team does well, hopefully, by December.
Yeah. You know what's interesting? Do you know, like, I think the biggest beneficiary of the OKC Carmelo trade was Paul George. Paul George seems like a guy who's a star, has superstar stuff, but doesn't always have superstar intangibles. I mean, remember, like, last year's playoffs, game one, he totally foo-balled that last sequence of game one where they could have easily stolen one against Cleveland on the road when they were up, and they lost it at the end. And because, you know, George, instead of taking the last shot, he kicked it out to, I guess, what was it, Miles? And he tried to blame Miles for it, and Miles said, you know, he should have hit a better shot. But that was all on Paul George. If you're a star, a damn near superstar, you should take the last shot. I don't care what anybody says. But but that's not here nor there. I think that he would thrive, talk about Paul George now, thrive under anonymity, you know, if you will, because OKC, that is Russell Westbrook's show. We all know that.
Mm-hmm.
They know that. And Carmelo is a scorer. So Paul George, in addition to having a great offensive game, he could play defense. So his deal is probably, while he seems to be, to me, to be more suited for like a third role, the third wheel, kind of like Chris Bosh. And because, again, this dude thrives on anonymity. I just don't think that Paul George has superstar mentality. He has superstar stuff, but not superstar mentality. So that takes the pressure off of him to be the man. You know, he could be like a Scottie Pippen-like dude. You know, get your buckets. Also, be like be a defensive stopper. Not necessarily do the dirty work, but just be like a kind of like a almost like a kind of like a glue guy, if you will. And let Carmelo get his buckets. He's a great spot-up shooter. I know that you talked about him being a stretch four. That would be perfect for Carmelo because he was a great spot-up shooter last year for the Knicks, especially from three. It's Russell Westbrook's team. So I think that Paul George would not have that pressure thrust upon him, which I think is great. The other thing I want to ask is, with Russell Westbrook now sticking around, well, first of all, how at this point were you I mean, I know I was disappointed that he may not be going to L.A. or leaving town to go somewhere next year. That takes away the drama from next season. But at any rate, with Russell Westbrook sticking around and given and provided that things, let's say for the sake of argument, things work out to the point that OKC gets to at least the conference finals, which is not so far fetched now. You think mm-hmm. Paul George wants to stick around because I think Carmelo has two more years on his contract. So do you think that Paul George wants to stick around since next year he'll be a free agent? Or do you think he'll test the waters?
Well, according to him, and this is a direct quote, but he basically said that, you know, the signing of the extension by Westbrook will weigh heavily in his decision on whether or not to stay in the OKC. I will say that it should be the place for him to stay in terms of what to do at the end of the year because he will have Carmelo still there. He will have Westbrook there. I haven't looked at the numbers in terms of the books and whether or not they'll be able to bring in bench help because I don't know how – that's the other thing too. As much as we love to talk about big threes are nothing if they can't get respite from players from their bench. If you can't get me somebody that's going to come out there and just be a defensive stopper or somebody else that can give you a bucket when it seems like your big three have been clamped down or they're just having a bad shooting night, it's worth it. Or somebody that can get you that big rebound at the end of the game, it's nothing. And that's what I want to see, really. I want to see how this bench, because as of right now, they have a lot of talent at that power forward spot. I don't know if they're going to keep all four guys, and all four guys, if I remember correctly, it's, like I said before, Patterson, Carmelo, Jeremy Grant, and Nick Collison. And, you know, Grant and Collison have had some times in the league, well, some experience of playing in the league. I don't know if they're going to keep them both. They might keep them both, but it's going to be a situation where you're going to need those guys and Felton to come out and be clutch for at least a minute. So if they confuse and they have it, so that if they don't have the talent on the bench now to do it, they can bring in one guy to do so, and they don't have to spend a ton of money. They just need somebody that's going to come in and be a master of one thing, be it a defensive master or whatever, like I talked about earlier. If they can do that, I think it would be attractive for Paul George to do so. I mean, I understand that LeBron may end up going out west, and that the possibility of that happening is still there.
I think it's going to be. But, I think it's still in the. I think it'll stay in the East. I think it's just chicken shit to go out west, but that's just me.
Oh, really? We'll see. We'll see. Because you know what? You might be right
chicken.
Because
chicken is
You know, the West has gotten thicker so much so that even the All-Star game has changed its format. But that's a whole nother monster in itself. But it should that move. Of re-signing Westbrook to kind of make a long story short, yes, it plays heavily in keeping Paul George there. But, you know, the thing is, does Paul want to continue to live in Oklahoma City during the season? So,
well, he lived in Indianapolis, so, I mean.
You're right. I forgot about that.
Too much of a difference, but that's just
yeah.
the difference. But that most cities are in the middle of nowhere, so there you go. Right quick, we touched upon this big three of sorts that's born in the OKC. And I touched on this earlier, too. We both had, the West is going to be stacked. It's going to be actually fun to watch the NBA again. it's like make the NBA great again, like whatever the hell that acronym would be. But in addition to the Warriors, you have and OKC, you have San Antonio. Obviously, they still got the Claw himself, Kawhi Leonard, as well as Tony Parker. There's Wally Vats along, to go with what's the name of that guy who played center who was kind of came up pretty soft last year in the playoffs.
Oh, LaMarcus Aldridge.
Yeah, LaMarcus Aldridge. I mean, he should be embarrassed. But anyway, nevertheless, very skilled big. and any team that's coached with by Paul by Greg Popovich always has more than a good shot. And now add to that mix, you have the Houston with both James Harden and Chris Paul, and mm-hmm. from the looks of things the other night, they look like they're getting the chemistry together, and that's four teams. That's going to be a great four. I mean, this is what we want. This is what we had in the 80s, right? We all knew that, you know, during the time where the Lakers and Celtics were cut above everyone else, you still had great squads. You still had the Atlanta mm-hmm. Hawks. You still had the Detroit Pistons before they broke through. You still had the 76ers. You still had, going out west, you still had the Portland Trailblazers. You still had the Seattle Supersonics. And going back east, you had the Milwaukee Bucks. Back at the end, Jack Sigma and Sidney Moncrief. Come on.
Mm-hmm.
Barry Cummings. Shoot, that was a great squad. And even Indiana was coming of age during that time. So we're seeing that now. Granted, I think the league is too damn big still. I mean, you have no business having 30 teams. But as long as you have at least four teams in the conference that can compete, and these three of those teams could actually compete legitimately with Golden State, it's a great thing. And then you go on east now, and now you have, of course, LeBron and them still in Cleveland, but now you have Kyrie and Boston to go along with Gordon Hayward. And mm-hmm. and they were able to retain the young guys. Terry Rozier, they were able to keep the draft pick from Duke, and also drawing a blank here, Al Horford. So they still have those guys to go along with the new guys, and you know, and don't sleep on your Washington Bullets, and even the Toronto Raptors. I think things have gotten a little bit even out in the East. I still think it's Cleveland, Boston, everybody else, but at least to everybody else led by Washington and Toronto, you can't sleep on them. So now I think the NBA is now more exciting. It's going to be more exciting, a hell of a lot more exciting than it was last year because you essentially had two teams and everyone else. But now you have a seemingly like a good six to eight teams. And that's not a bad thing. And that's going to make it more exciting to see who actually gets a hold of the quote-unquote throne that's held by Golden State.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. I still believe it's Golden State and Cleveland's finals to have, you know, unless injury comes in or someone just completely surprises the hell out of us. But like you said, there are quality teams, and there are two teams in the West that you didn't bring up that are young up-and-comers. And, of course, New Orleans that still have the Brow and Boogie.
Right.
Even though I'm not too keen on the rest of that squad, they still got two quality big men. But Minnesota,
oh my God. Okay. Yeah.
All of that young talent,
Jimmy Butler now.
Plus Jimmy Butler coming in with an understanding of John Thibodeau's system, and bringing another solid defender into that group of young that young nucleus with Wiggins and Carl Towns.
Oh my god,
that is the team I want to see or see how they continue to develop, and whether or not at this point they'll be able to compete with the likes of Golden State and OKC. I mean, they're still young, but they're heading
but they're
in the right direction.
They're a whole lot better on paper. They got a good coach. They got a good coach leading them, and they got a guy who understands the system. To your point, Jimmy Butler, who's also I think he's a superstar. I mean, he's great on both ends of the floor. Would you help their young squad a lot? It's a good example for them. I forgot about it's my bet on that one. I totally whiffed on that one. Shout out to the Timberwolves. I mean, it's going to be a very interesting, very exciting season for the first time, and it's great. It's great to see that. Great to see that balance, if you will. And I don't care if the rest of the league is garbage. As long as you have like like 6 to 9 teams that are good, at least on paper, enough to compete, even though there's maybe 2 favorites that we have at the head of the heap right now, the top of the heap, and Golden State and Cleveland. But the fact that you have others out there who have a legit shot, that's great, man. That's outstanding. Again, I mean, I don't care if it's like 6 to 9 teams. Better than 6 to 9 teams than just 2.
Exactly. Those other teams have legit puncher's chance. You know, you can catch somebody on a bad night, catch somebody on a couple of bad nights within a series. You have an injury here or there. Anything can happen, even though I still feel as though it's Golden State and Cleveland. Anything can still happen, and it'll be fun to watch. It'll be a little bit more fun to watch instead of sitting back watching, thinking, okay, all right, let's hurry up and get to the finals, because I'm not going to sit here and want to watch, you know, us trudge or drudge through the regular season and the finals, only waiting for Cleveland and Golden State. But that move of Cleveland adding Dwayne Wade, it adds another veteran talent. But it's another veteran talent. You know, it's another guy that's on the wrong side of 30 on that squad, when you already have a young Isaiah Thomas that has a hip issue and won't be back until December. And then you add Devon Williams, or is it Darren Williams? Which one is it? He hasn't been an all-star in so long. I can't even pronounce his name correctly. And you add D. Wade, who's going to have to be the starter in that situation until IT comes back. They still got LeBron James. So that LeBron team will still be what it is. You know, so they'll be interesting to watch. And Kevin Love is going to have to be a guy that steps up in that situation too, because of the fact that they lose Kyrie. He's going to really have to step it up, because a lot of those other older pieces may not be able to take that next level. He's going to have to do it.
Right, exactly. He's going to become that guy. One last thing before we shift gears to NFL. You mentioned this earlier, the all-star format, where you got 2 cats, the 2 leading vote getters going to pick their own squad. It's kind of like the they used to do for the Pro Bowl before they finally scrapped that idea. Which they should, by the way, scrap the Pro Bowl altogether, but that's another story for another time. What do you think of it? Do you like the idea, or do you just think it's a total waste of time?
It's an interesting idea. I had a debate with someone on Facebook. Well, it wasn't necessarily a debate. It was just a quick back and forth. But on Facebook, I had a little conversation with someone about the format. He didn't like the format. He basically said, you know, that format's been done before in other major sports, and it didn't work out. I had to correct them. No, it's only been done really in hockey. And then hockey took it. Well, hockey in the NFL, I'm sorry. Hockey in the NFL did it. NFL stopped it, but that's just because the Pro Bowl ain't what it used to be. And NHL just went into a whole other direction from there, because they're still trying to figure out ways to attract fans, which they need help in. It's not a bad thing. It'll be interesting to see how it's done. God, especially this way. Because we already know who the 2 main vote getters are going to be. It's going to be LeBron and Steph. We already know that. But it'll be a little bit more interesting to see who picks who for the sake of what, and who's going to be super petty. Will LeBron pick Kyrie? You know what I'm saying? You know,
what
point guard will he take in that situation? Will he take his teammates in those situations? Will he snatch his boys? Will he take guys from the West? It'll be interesting to see who takes who this way, because it'll be another conversation starter. So that's why I'm a little bit more intrigued by this. But yeah, they had to do something. I didn't think on paper as of right now, the East had the talent level to compete with the West. But we've seen it before, but maybe not this much of a lean, though. I would say like the early 2000s, it was real heavy on the West and kind of lean on the East. And the East, I think, won that one in D.C. with AI and Vince and Jameson and a couple of those guys. But God, I don't remember it being this top heavy or on the Western side. But like I said, it'll cause a lot of conversation in terms of who gets selected by whom come February.
When LeBron is either forced to do so or just lets Kyrie go last. I'm looking forward to that. The pettiness is going to be off the charts. Can you imagine if Russell Westbrook was one of the top two vote getters, he gets to choose whether to have Kevin Durant in the squad or not, or let him just languish. Wouldn't that be hilarious? That would be TV gold right there.
You know, that's another situation that we didn't talk about. That's right there for the picking. My God, yeah, there's just a lot of pettiness, bro. That's to be had.
I'm all here for it. I'm a petty dude. I'm not mature, and I'm petty. I'm proud of it. So I'm just looking forward to the pettiness with some popcorn. Yep.
For the sake of pettiness, I think I'm gonna start a campaign that we get LeBron and Russell Westbrook as the two team captains, just for the sake of pettiness. I don't even want it to be Steph and LeBron. I want it to be Russell and LeBron, just because of animosity that may or may not still be there.
I'm just looking for. I think anything that's different would be fresh. Like anything fresh like that would be a good thing. Would drum up interest. I know I'm not going to be the only one that's wrong for the pettiness. So we'll see about that. But other than that, it makes next year exciting. So the NBA got what it wanted during the NFL season, no less. There's people talking about it. So good for Adam Silver and the crew for doing that. So speaking of the NFL, it's hard to – I mean, the quarter point is over. I can't believe we're already 5 weeks through the season. But, I mean, this is the one weird-ass season. I mean, first of all, look at what's going on. Look what went on last week. You had New England lose at home to the Panthers.
Uh-huh.
You had Buffalo winning in Atlanta.
Mm-hmm.
You had you also had who else? You had the Lions winning on the road to go 3-1. And you had what's his name doing this thing? I call him what's his name? Deshaun Watson scoring 5 touchdowns. That's a rookie record, if I'm not mistaken. 5 touchdowns, 4 passing, 1 running. And last but not least, probably perhaps my favorite thing and perhaps your favorite thing knowing your fandom is seeing the Rams win in Dallas. No one saw that coming. No, even the tens of fans that the Rams have didn't see that coming. So all I say all this to ask you is this. Who the hell is the best team in the NFL right now?
It's easy. It's the only undefeated team in the NFL right now, and that is the Kansas City Chiefs. It's not because they're just undefeated, but look at their resume at who they've beaten. They've beaten a quality Redskins team just this past Monday, and the Skins took them to the brink.
Redskins are a lot better than what they are. I think the Redskins are a lot better than what they were last year, but go ahead.
Oh, a whole lot better, especially on the defensive side of the ball. And the way that they're playing on the defensive side of the ball is what's really impressing me. But I digress. But they beat the Skins. They beat a quality Eagles team. They pounded the Patriots on opening night and ring day.
Yes, they did.
And who was the fourth team that Kansas City beat?
I can't remember who it is. They beat the Chargers on the road, but the Chargers could easily be 3-1 right now. They just don't know how to close games.
That's what it is. Well, you know, you can't trust a Young Ho? Is that his first name?
Yeah.
Young Ho?
Yeah, the kicker. Yeah. Did he
get his
ass
fired? You know what? If he hasn't, he should.
Okay.
Because, like you said, they should be 3-1 at least because of him.
They should be 3-1.
Yeah. Yeah, so, you know, if you beat a tough divisional foe in the Chargers, the Chargers may be 0-4, but they're always pesky. They've always been pesky, and they will continue to be pesky. But you know, they have the strongest resume to me. They do. So along with being 4-0, it's not like they've beaten four bad teams. They beat four quality teams, and, you know, and did so impressively. So, yeah.
Well, you know, you're not going to get an argument out of me on that one. I think the Chiefs are by far the best team in the NFL right now. I mean, you know, they're long with the resume, but they've had their winning. They're winning with guys. I mean, they don't have any big studs in their squad. They're winning with great coaching, and that's Andy Reid. I mean, how sick do you think Eagles fans have been the last two seasons? Well, the last few seasons, I should say. They ran his ass out. They ran Andy Reid out of town. Bring in Chip Kelly, his silly ass, for like a season and a half. And then to go hire this Peterson cat, who I think he was an assistant under Andy Reid, so that's a good thing. And he's bringing that style to Philly. And Philly's actually played pretty well. I mean, even though we remember that last year when they got off to a hot start and they fizzled down a stretch, but at least look a little bit better. I don't think they're the best team in the NFC East. I still think that comes down between Washington and Dallas. But, you know, we'll see how the rest of the season plays out. But I'm looking at the power rankings, and I'm jumping around here. But when I look at the ESPN power rankings, one thing that gets my goat, what's this love about the Seattle Seahawks? Why are they sixth? Why are they ranked sixth in the league after the quarter point? I can see the Wings being in the top 10. They were my top 10. They were my number 10 teams. As a matter of fact, but why the hell is Seattle in there? Why?
You know what, Scott? And I'm gonna ask you because I asked the same question of Coach and Lou yesterday on CZ Sports. What is the difference between NFL poll and power rankings? I'm trying to understand the difference. What is the difference between the two? Because in a lot of power rankings over the past couple of weeks, it seems as though whoever's working on these power rankings still has a love affair for teams that just happen to have been great over the past couple of seasons, but to me, just haven't been that impressive this season. And that being the New England Patriots, the Seattle Seahawks, the Pittsburgh Steelers. Even though they're 3-1, I don't know. I think I have them top 10. I just don't happen to remember what my number 9 and number 10 are off the top of my head. But I think I may have them top 10, but they're not in my top. But, you know, they are 3-1, but I'm not highly impressed by that 3-1, especially with them losing to the Chicago Bears in overtime, which was kind of concerning me a little bit. But, you know, those teams. So I'm like, why are we in the Packers? That's another team that I think the Packers are in my top 8. Let me look to see to make sure. No, they're not. The Packers aren't in my top 8. They may be number 9 or number 11, maybe number 12. But they're once again, 3-1, but not an impressive 3-1 to me. You know, so those four franchises, for whatever reason, people like to think, and I just find it weird. A lot of the things that I'm hearing when people rank their teams is the potential of these teams. Well, these Bammers ain't showing me no potential yet because they're losing games. Or they're beating weak teams. Or, you know, somebody has an injury and that's why they lost that game. So what? Other teams have had injuries and lost to other tough teams, but they don't get no respect. Or this team just beat the Cowboys. I don't care because that team beat the team that beat the Cowboys, yet you have them higher than them. So how is that possible? I'm waiting for this team to have a quality win. Yet they gave you two decent wins over teams that are 3-1 or better, and they don't get no respect either. The Bills, they're four teams. Let me stop with my rant right now because I'm about to go to a huge rant like I did on the show last night. But four of my top 8 teams are teams, if you would have told me before the season started that, hey, D, they'd be in your top 8 right now, I would have laughed at you. And those four teams are the Eagles. Even though you don't think that they're the best team in the East, I think that they're the best team in the East as of right now. They may not finish in the best, but as of right now, I think that they're the best. That's why I have them as high as I do. The Skins, I have the Skins in my top eight because their two losses were the two quality teams, Philadelphia and Kansas City, especially with that loss to Kansas City and Arrowhead in a situation that they could have won. But I don't want to talk about that because it's still a little stingy. But they also got wins over the Rams and over Oakland, who they demolished, who everybody was in love with. So Philly, Washington, the Rams is another team, because I didn't think the Rams would have the wins that they have right now, especially the win over Dallas. That one was highly impressive.
That got my attention. That got my attention right there.
Last but not least, the Buffalo Bills. There is no way in the world you would have told me that the Bills, hey, D-Nash, you know what? Bills going to start out 3-1. Man, if you don't get on my face, I'm going to smack you in your face. it's just insane to me that they are playing as well as they are. But those four teams aren't getting the love that I think they should.
Right, and you know what though? You know, I watched that. Seeing the Rams game, the Rams Cowboys game. I was at the, and don't laugh at me, but you're gonna laugh at me anyway. I was at the Renaissance Fair Sunday.
I'm not gonna laugh at you at all. You are a family man. I am not gonna laugh at you at all. No, you do a family stuff. Hey.
Oh boy, but anyway, but watching that, man, I was like, what? But let me give you my top five, or my top ten rather. You're probably gonna fight me over it. But here we go. I got the Chiefs.
Yeah, I was a little beefy when I saw it.
We'll let the listeners and later on the people on Facebook throw some shade at me as well. But number two team are the Falcons. Number three team, my Steelers. Number four, the Broncos. Fifth, the Rams. I got the Lions there at number six. The Panthers. You can't deny that Panthers win over New England, even though New England couldn't stop me, you, and like nine other cats on the street corner from scoring on them. You know, I got Carolina 7. I got Philly at 8, Dallas at 9, and New England at 10. So, I mean, that's who I think are the top teams at the quarter pole point of the season. I mean, all that crap's going to change. But, I mean, hell, you know, I know there was some Bills fans who got mad at me a little bit on Facebook. But, come on. I mean, how funny is having a team that's – I mean, say this with me, Dwayne. The division, your division leader is after week four in the AFC East or the Buffalo Bills. How weird is that? How weird is that?
No. Even weirder, the Jets, who are tied with the Patriots, and if the Patriots aren't careful and lose to Tampa tomorrow night, because the Jets are going into Cleveland, and they could beat the Browns. The Browns could legitimately be the number two team in the East after week five. That, my friend, would be weird. But that even weirder, who does Buffalo play this week? Because if Buffalo takes an L and the Jets win, the Jets will be tied for first place? Are you kidding me? This is a team that we said will be 0-16. And they could very easily be tied for first place with a couple of losses and a win by them over the Browns. So a lot of things are weird right now. I'm still trying to grapple the whole of it. But the thing is, I think I have a whole lot more traction right now on what's going on than a lot of these other quote-unquote sports pundits that are putting out these power rankings and are still holding on. Now, like you, I think I have the Panthers in my top 12. But I didn't think that win over the Patriots was that dynamic. With the Patriots having one of the worst defenses in the league, and with the Patriots looking the way that they're looking right now, they barely beat the Saints. The Saints ain't got no defense. That's right. The Patriots ain't won at home yet. That's another thing that concerns me. The Pats ain't won at home yet. So that's why I didn't want to give – yes, they're the Patriots, but they're not the Patriots. So that's why I'm like, I'm not completely sold on that win just yet. Let me go ahead and see what the Panthers do against other teams. But let me give you my top eight real quick. Chiefs 1, Eagles 2, Broncos 3, Lions 4, Bills 5, Falcons 6, Skins 7, and Rams 8. And that's why I have it right now with teams like the Panthers, Packers, Steelers, and Patriots on the outside looking in. But you know, they're right there. All it takes and the Raiders. All of those teams right there are on the outside looking in. And like I said before, this is just how I see it as of right now. This is not where I see a team going in the future or how I see a team playing out or they have their strengths and they're just not playing up to their strengths. Nah. Straight wins and losses, straight quality points, how they're doing it, how their teams are looking statistically, and that's how I'm ranking these teams. My polls over the past 2 years have always evened out in the end in terms of ranking how the team's finished. It's almost been relatively close, but, yeah, they always work their ways out. So I'm sticking to my style and how I've been doing it and with my quality points. So, yeah, that's what I got.
Yeah.
But I just want those four teams to get a little bit more love than what they're doing. The Seattle Seahawks, though, dog? Yeah. Sixth?
Yeah, sixth? I know. I was trying to tweet at and troll some of the ESPN NFL-wise about that one. I didn't see that one coming. Speaking of the Seahawks, I'm glad you mentioned those cats. I mean, who would have thunk, first of all, whoever thunk, you know, that they would not be the best team in the own division at this point of the season. And you know, because also they will be facing that team that they're chasing. I mean, again, say this with me. The Seahawks are chasing the Los Angeles Rams and the NFC West. I mean, I can't believe I just said that. I mean, it's just crazy. But it's going to be interesting. You got two show-me games next week. I mean
mm-hmm.
You know, the quarter point's already over. The first quarter's already over at the season. Here starts the second quarter, week 5. You got two teams. It's going to be show me. It's going to be like, you know, Missouri to show me state. It's going to be the Missouri week. Show me week. You got Seattle going to L.A. to face the Rams.
Yeah.
So if the Rams win that game, they are in the driver's seat in a huge way in the NFC West. Again, words I never thought would come out of my mouth. But the other game, the other show-me game, is the Carolina Panthers at the Detroit Lions. Both are 3-1. Mm-hmm. Both are tied for the division, leading their respective divisions. Both coming off of good wins last week. The Panthers having perhaps the biggest win of the week, in my opinion, going to New England and winning. I think if whoever comes out of that game with a win, we'll have to keep your eye on them for the remainder of the season. Because if you look at both the respective divisions, first of all, the NFC South, to me, is giving the AFC West a run for the money for being the toughest division in football. You got all four teams in the NFC West, NFC East, the NFC South, rather, they all have at least 500 records. New Orleans being the worst at 2-2. So so basically that's the strongest division. But for to see the Panthers or the Lions, you know, who looks like it's gonna be a 2-team race in the NFC North between them and the Packers, if they win on Sunday, I mean, first of all, I mean you know the Lions go back a couple of weeks against the Falcons, they acquit themselves quite well, I think, even though they came up short. Some people thought that it was robbed, like when the replay took away that touchdown by Golden Tate. I think that Detroit's a team to watch, and if Detroit does win at home against Cam Newton and the boys next week, this coming weekend, you got to look out for the Lions. So basically, that game in Detroit, whoever comes out on top, you're gonna have to keep a real close eye on them. Because no one would have pegged either of those teams at 4-1. And also, if the Rams were to knock off the Seahawks at home, the Seahawks are struggling on offense. I don't know what the hell is going on with their offense. But
I know exactly what's going on with that offense.
I know. I mean, if the Rams close the deal at home against the Seahawks, they are firm in the driver's seat. And no one in Mama thought that that could happen.
No one.
Yeah, exactly. But basically, if the Rams do win, we got to start taking this boy seriously.
Oh, I'm already taking him a little bit seriously. And a couple of points. I think there's a third.
Yeah.
There's a third show me game, and then it's the one I referenced earlier. It's New England versus Tampa. Tampa's 2-1.
Tampa,
New England's 2-2. No one thought that New England would be 3-1. Well, not 3-1. I'm sorry, 2-2. Let alone 3-1. Everybody thought that they would come in and be undefeated at this point because they're the Patriots.
Right.
And you got the GOAT. You got Tom Brady. But no, they're 2-2. They got one of the worst. They got one of the worst defenses in the league. That defense ain't looking like themselves. They're very bad. They're not getting a lot of production. Well, they're getting sporadic production from the offense. And you got a team in Tampa who hasn't shown his full potential. You just had DeSean Jackson complaining that he ain't getting no touches. And that's the D-Zacks I know. Exactly. That's the D-Zacks I knew.
Death Jackson's in him complaining.
Yeah, so, you know, I don't miss that D-Jacks. I miss the D-Jacks that catches bombs going deep. I miss that one, but not the complainer. So, you know, I'm glad that the complainer's in Tampa, too. But whoever wins that one, once again, they prove that they're taking a step forward, especially in competing within their division, if not just the conference. Like you said, with L.A. and Seattle, Seattle has a history of struggling early on in the past couple of seasons. Another thing about Seattle, they have a history of struggling against the Rams, regardless of how bad the Rams
are and
how good Seattle is. They always have had an issue with the Rams. And I said this the week that you did, the NFL preview. Teams that have your boy Wade Phillips as the defensive coordinator in their first year win the division. Wade is in L.A. Just saying.
Yeah.
And it
he
ain't just been.
Exactly.
He can still coach defenses, which is why I'm upset that he turned my skins down and said no. But they still got a quality D, and their offense looks brand new. Jared Goff. Who knew? Who knew? Sean McVay comes in. It helps them out.
Yes.
Todd Gurley's playing better. They need to get a little bit more consistent play from Sammy Watkins, but I didn't expect that yet because he just got traded over from Buffalo. But the Rams, who knew? Who knew? And then that Detroit game as well. Detroit, Carolina, right? Once again, Carolina's been spotty. We just questioned a couple of weeks ago whether or not Cam is 100%. And then last Sunday, Cam comes out and scores 4 touchdowns or is responsible for 4 touchdowns against the Patriots. And Detroit is Detroit, and they've been looking relatively good. The thing is, if they can beat Carolina, the Packers, who haven't necessarily impressed me yet this year, they can take another leg up on them. And I think things won't be clear because anything that happens, teams can go on runs, and once again, injuries can happen. But those teams will look better in that next step in terms of making the playoffs at the end of the year. But, yeah, those are 3 games that stand out to me as of this week. Oh, and the Jets-Browns, that's another game that's kind of a show me.
Why?
Because let me explain why. Let me explain why. Because remember, beginning of the season, there were talks that both of these teams would be winless. And who would get the first win at this point? Now, fortunes have kind of changed. Browns are still winless. Jets got 2 wins. Jets are supposed to walk away with this win. But is this 2-2 Jets team for real?
Yeah.
I don't know yet. I can't trust these Bammers yet. This was supposed to be a dumpster fire. And for whatever reason, ain't nobody like this dumpster on fire yet. So
they can avoid the dumpster fire moniker by beating the Browns, or the Browns could be that thing that starts that fire and they happen to go 2-14 and the Browns got to win. That's why that game is interesting to me. Somebody's dumpster fire is either going to get lit too, because one dumpster fire has already been started, or the fire that's already started is just going to become a full-blown blaze, and Hugh Jackson sadly will be out of there. But I think he'll land on his feet in Cincinnati, because I think Marvin Lewis may be out of there.
Yeah, I think I know, because word on the street, that was supposed he was supposed to be Hugh Jackson was supposed to be the coach in waiting in Cincinnati,
yeah.
But Mike Brown wasn't having that. So Hugh Jackson may, in a weird twist, may get his wish in the end. But we'll get y'all out here on this, man. And I vowed this on my blog. I vowed it with some buddies of mine, never to utter the name LaVar Ball ever again. But watching his moves before what happened, like, yesterday, he seemed crazy. He ranged from crazy to crazy like a fox. Or something,
yeah.
And sometimes from crazy like a fox to downright sort of fireable. I mean, he was crazy like a fox with Lonzo Ball and promoting the, you know, the brand, the Big Baller brand. He actually spoke LaVar's ball. I mean, Lonzo's success, like career path into existence. UCLA, the Lakers. And he's looking pretty damn good for the Lakers right now. So if that picks up, and he generated a lot of interest for his Big Baller brand. And if Lonzo does his thing, continues to do his thing, becomes like the second coming of Jason Kidd, only with a jump shot, who knows? Who knows for his brand? And he already has reality shows in the works, which is like, make it stop. But fast forward to LaMelo, what he's doing with the youngest kid. He's basically he just straight up took him out of school and is going to homeschool the kid because he didn't like the way his high school coach said, like, got on him, and I'm just paraphrasing here, just summarize here, to chastise LaMelo for taking so many shots and not being committed on the defensive end. So, and also, they bought that kid for a 16th birthday at Lamborghini. Who does that? Who does that?
Come on,
so,
dog.
What? Again, he ranges from crazy like a fox without a tail, as my dad says, to sort of fireable. He's basically planting seeds in the youngest child, LaMelo, what they call Melo, for being so spoiled and also entitled.
Yeah,
and that's not what you want. Look at the work well with Lonzo, because Lonzo doesn't have that personality. He actually wants to work hard and be coached. I don't think LaMelo's like that.
No.
So basically, I'm hoping for the best. Again, I appreciate what LaVar has done as a father, but I think his helicopter dad way will work with Lonzo because of Lonzo's temperament and personality. It's going to really backfire in spades with Melo, and that's just unfortunate. I just wish that sometimes parents should just leave their children alone, let them learn, let them make mistakes, let them fall, let them learn how to pick themselves back up. That's how they grow up.
Now I will say this:
and now he won't be able to play college ball because he has like a shoe brand. But sorry.
Oh really? Wow!
Yeah,
I forgot about that.
Yeah, he has that shoe brand. So I don't think he'd be able to play college ball. So his only option would be to go overseas now.
Yeah, I was going to say he takes the Brandon Jennings route, plays a year overseas.
Yeah.
Matter of fact, how old is he now? Is he 16 now?
16. He's 16 years old, yeah.
Yeah, so basically what he does is he waits those 2 years out, goes overseas when he's 18, plays however long it takes for him to develop. Then he comes over to the NBA when he's ready. But Daddy Ball don't work if the sons are horrible basketball players.
Right.
If they were no good, Daddy Ball don't get no attention. So
right.
it's a compliment to the Suns to continue who have continued to be good athletes despite the attention that the father has garnered, even though it will reflect on them, because of course you know that's how it works. You know, we'll tease you because of what your pops does, but you know, I just hope that the son doesn't head in that direction. Now, we've seen brother situations work before. Eli Payton, Vontae, and Vernon Davis. You know, we've seen brother situations work before. We've also seen brother situations not work before. Michael and Marcus Vick. So I just hope that LaMelo is matter of fact, the Morris brothers, they're doing well. So I hope to see that, you know, LaMelo ends up being, you know, on the good side of the brother. And not even talent-wise. You know, sometimes you'll see one talented brother and one untalented brother. See Blake Griffin and his brother in the Gronkowskis. It happens. But I just don't want to see LaMelo in a situation where he gets into legal problems, especially with the name LaMelo. I really don't want to see that, man. So I'm hoping that the situation of pulling him out of a stern coach who probably – it could be a situation where that's just the coach's coaching style, or he just being a jerk because you know about daddy and daddy being a jerk. But, yeah, man, I'm just hoping the best for the young one because he's just waiting this time. He's basically going to be taught basketball at home school for 2 years until these kids are going overseas. So I want to see how this path turns out for him and whether or not it leads to the NBA or not.
Well, my man, again, I know I said this earlier, but thank you for helping me on this journey to you know, this is my 200th show. And I know you've been on a lion's share of all of those 200. Here's to another 200, my man, and everything. Well, to the next 100, then the next 100, then 500, and who the hell knows? Who knows? Maybe we'll parlay this to a radio show. Who knows? But thank you again, brother, for joining me to like tonight on this podcast, help celebrate my 200th podcast. Really appreciate it, my man.
Hey, as always, thanks for having me, my brother. Whenever you need me, you know I'm here, man. And here's to another 200 more, man. And hopefully I can get me at least one parade in before another 200 come around.
I know. I got to work on that. Maybe I go somewhere and drink tomorrow. But anyway, take care, bro. All right. That's my guy, Dwayne Nash. Please check him out on his podcast every Tuesday night here on Blog Talk Radio, Sleazy Radio with the Coach, and also his sports blog where he talks about HBCU sports, .com/HBCUsports. Thank y'all again for tuning in. Thank y'all for bearing me on this journey to 200 podcasts, and hopefully the next 100, the next 200 after that, next 100 after that will be just as great, if not better. I hope y'all will like it. Anyway. Thank you all for tuning in again. Have a good night. God bless. 06. Peace.